It's so good to have you with us this weekend. My name's Kurt. If we've not had a chance to meet, and as we always say around here, if it's your first time, man, we certainly hope it's not your last time, and you want to just rejoin us. It's one of the greatest compliments that you can pay, and so it's good to have you here. Those of you tuning in online, it's good to have you join us from wherever you may be tuning in from this weekend. And before we dive into our topic this weekend, here's something I think many of you might be interested in. As we've continued to, you know, be in touch with our local authorities and health officials here in Fishers, beginning next weekend, we've made the decision that we're going to begin to make masks optional in the venue for those of you who are fully vaccinated. You guys excited about that? Yeah, I figured you might be. And so if you're fully vaccinated, you can begin next weekend, June 10 through 13, to begin to decide if you want to wear masks or not. If you're not fully vaccinated, then we just ask you to have the integrity to continue to wear the mask, to be thoughtful of those around you. Now, on our kids' environment side of our building, we're going to continue to keep all of our students 3.5 years age and up masked, along with our older students, CSM students, all of our volunteers that serve with those students, because those are the environments where most of that population is not yet vaccinated. And so if you have kids in kids' environments on weekends, then we're just going to ask you to put a mask on when you go pick your kids up and drop them off. And then if you have kids in this space, if you have kids that come into this space that are not vaccinated and you have a little concern about that, we want you to know we're going to keep distancing in this room, and so you'll still reserve tickets and we'll provide appropriate distancing as we begin to make some of these moves. And then the last thing, many of our staff, almost all of us are fully vaccinated. Many of our volunteers are fully vaccinated, but we're still going to ask our volunteers as well as our staff to mask up every weekend so we can interact with everyone, whether you're vaccinated or not, and depending on your comfort level, because we want to make this a place for everyone. And so we'll continue to do that as a way of just putting others first. So that's exciting, right? It's exciting that we're moving in a good direction and our community's moving in a good direction. Well, hey, we're excited you're here. We're heading into our fourth installment in this series, Parenting in the 21st Century. And if you're a parent, or you hope to be a parent one day, or maybe you're helping someone else parent, or maybe you're watching your grown kids now parent, we're kind of giving you some foundations that really help us raise our kids, our middle schoolers, our high schoolers, and prepare them for life. Now, we've pointed out the last couple weekends that, you know, when it comes to good models for family, if you are wanting to look to the Bible for that, like, you are going to be discouraged, all right? There are not good family models in the Bible. If you want to see Jerry Springer 101, go to the Bible. There's a lot of dysfunction in the family units in the Bible, which is actually kind of hopeful for me and for you, because it reminds me that even when we have dysfunction, God can still work in the midst of our families. But the Bible does kind of lay out in terms of some of the things Jesus says and some of the things that some of the New Testament writers wrote, some foundations that do apply to how we raise our families. Now, Jesus never talked directly about parenting, all right, but he did lay some foundations and some behaviors. In fact, one of the things we looked at last weekend was this thing called the law of Christ, Jesus's new command. He said, "A new command I give you." He said, when you do this, it's gonna really impact the dynamics in your home. And he said, the new command was basically this: I want you to love others the way that I, meaning Jesus, loved you. And so that was the new command. And basically, when we as parents embed this into the culture of our families, and I use the word embed intentionally, because this is not something that comes natural. This is not something that's intuitive. And so we have to be very intentional in kind of creating this culture in our families. In fact, the Apostle Paul, he came along later, and he gives us some love handles, some handles on how to love this way, if you will. And he says, here's how love behaves. Here's how love behaves when it's under stress. Here's how love behaves in the context of a family and the people that are most important to you. In fact, one of the best explanations that Paul gives, we find in the New Testament part of the Bible. It's in a letter that he wrote to Christians in the city named Corinth. It's called the Letter to the Corinthians. It's his first letter. And he kind of explains some of these applications. And we began to look at these last week. In fact, we only got three words in. We got to this part right here. We looked at how love is patient. And then we kind of stalled out. Now, why did we stall out right there? Well, it's because this is usually where our parenting stalls out, with patience, right? At least that's where my parenting stalls out. And so if you missed last weekend, you can go back to the watch button on our website and you can catch up, because it was phenomenal. So Paul says, love is patient. And then he goes on and says kind of the next handle. He says, and love is kind. Now, when we think about kindness, kindness is kind of like soft, right? It's like hard to get handles on this. What exactly is kindness? So we kind of have to think about maybe the antithesis of kindness to understand what kindness is. And so unkindness is demonstrating a lack of self-control. Unkindness is demonstrating a lack of self-awareness, being totally unaware of how my life is impacting the people around me. And I've given you this definition before, but I don't know that there's a better context to think about this definition of kindness than right here as we think about what it means to parent and raise the next generation. So here it is right here. Kindness is simply loaning someone your strength rather than reminding them of their weakness. And moms and dads, here's the thing. Your kids already know where they failed. Right? They're reminded of it every single day. They don't need to be reminded of it by you. And moms, listen, your words are like weigh like 100 pounds. And dads, our words weigh like 500 pounds. And I'm not sure why it's that way. It just is. And so kindness is loaning our kids our strength and letting the world remind them of their weaknesses. And the world's going to do it. I mean, the world reminds them of their shortcomings every single day, just like it does you and I. I mean, they wake up every single day and they get ready for their day, just like you and I. And they wonder if they have what it takes to face that day, just like you and I do. Right? They wonder if they have what it takes. Every single day, the world makes them doubt themselves every time they fail, every time they fall, every time they mess up. And so this is why it's so important as parents for us to find a way to side with them instead of against them. Now, let me give you a picture of how this played out in our family a few years ago when I really stumbled upon what this looks like, and I go, oh, this is a difference maker right here. So a couple years ago, when my wife and I, Julie, when we went to Africa for the very first time, we left three of our four kids home here in the States with a family friend who nannies our kids when we're away. And so we would call them in the evenings, every other evening, and kind of catch up with them. And so my son, when I got on the FaceTime call with him, he said, hey, Dad, it's something I kind of need to tell you. I started up the go-kart, and it didn't go so well. And then he chuckled. Now, I knew what the chuckle was for because right before we left on the trip, we'd started up the go-kart, which he loved, you know, kind of running around the yard, and it didn't go well then either. Basically, the throttle was sticking, so every time I'd start it up, it would start to take off. In fact, I started it up, and I had a hold on the back bumper, but I was not able to hang on to it because the accelerator was stuck, and it took off down the driveway. It hit the cul-de-sac island in the middle of the cul-de-sac, hit the curb, and jumped about 4 to 5 feet up in the air, and it landed in the grasses in the middle of the cul-de-sac. I mean, if it were not for those grasses, that thing would have shot across our neighborhood unmanned, and who knows where it would have landed. All right, so Matt kind of knew this probably wasn't a good idea. So he says to me, Dad, you know, I got it started, but the throttle stuck again, and I knew where this was going. And before he knew it, it shot across the yard and went right into our neighbor Maria's car. And I'm going to be honest, I was not happy in that moment, halfway across the world. But here's the thing, he already knew it wasn't a good decision. And so instead of me saying to him, Matt, what were you thinking? I mean, why did you do this? And reminding him of what he already knew, I didn't do that. And I also could have jumped in and said, hey, okay, let me call Maria. I'll work it out. I'll find out, you know, if we need to pay for anything. I'll find out if, you know, what we need to do to make things right. But I didn't do that either because, see, if I do that, then he begins to think, okay, I made a mistake, but my dad doesn't think I know how to get out of the mistake. And so, I mean, there's all kinds of dynamics going on right there. So instead, I took a different posture because there's really nothing else I could do. And the posture was really simple. I just went like this. I went, oh my gosh, Matt, I am so sorry. Oh my word, I can't believe that happened. I'm so sorry that you ran the go-kart into Maria's car. And he just kind of looked at me. And he waited. And I said, so what are you going to do next? And he went on. He said, well, actually, I walked over and I rang her doorbell and I told her about it. And I asked her to come out because I told her I scratched the car and I'd pay for it. And she came out and looked at it and she said, you know, thanks for telling me, but you don't need to do any more. I just appreciate your honesty. And see, he had already figured it out. And I honored him by assuming that he, you know, was smart enough to figure it out. And he was responsible enough to handle it, and it allowed me to side with him in this moment, even though I wasn't happy about it, instead of against him. And in that moment, I was able to loan him my strength instead of reminding him of his failure, of his weakness. And I discovered, like, man, this is actually a posture as my kids get older that really works. Now, while I'm on this, it's kind of a big deal. A few weeks ago, in week one of the series, we looked at these four phases of parenting. If you were here, you remember these. And we talked about phase two there, the king-queen phase, and how important it is to get our children to obey. I mean, when they hit that toddler phase and they say the word no, we have to, you know, help them understand that there are certain things they have to obey. And they have to understand there's an authority. And if we don't establish that in their lives, there's going to be outages with them in authority and outages with them in God. But at the same time, as our kids get older, as they progress into older elementary and into the tween phases, we have to stop kind of having those predetermined consequences. If you do this, then here's the consequence. And we have to begin to instead act unprepared when they make a mistake. I mean, that's what I was able to do with Matt right here. All right, because he wants to know what's the consequence. He's like waiting for me, but I hadn't even thought about it. And I almost could be like, oh my gosh, I can't even believe this happened. I didn't expect you to fail. It wasn't like I was expecting him to do this. And then I could act surprised. And when they're young, you have to be swift. You have to connect the dots on how what they did. There's a consequence for that. But when they get older, it's good to drag it out because they know there's going to be a consequence, but it allows you to side with them before you discipline them. And let's think about this for a moment. Isn't this what God did for you and for me? I mean, think about it. Well, you were still a sinner. God said what? Oh my gosh, why'd you do that? You knew you shouldn't have done that. No, he didn't say that at all, did he? He didn't remind us. What'd he do? What'd Jesus do? He sided with you. He died for you. He loaned you his strength and did for you what you could not do for yourself. So here's a good question that I think would be good for all of us to kind of think about in terms of our parenting. What is your go-to response? I mean, think about this. This is really helpful, I think. What is your go-to response to weakness in your children? And when your kids, when they fail, when they have a moment and they don't do the right thing, do you side with them or do they feel like you side with them? Or do they feel like you side and move against them? So Paul says, love is patient and love is kind. And then here's what he says next. He says, love does not envy, it does not boast, and it is not proud. Now think about these three statements right here. The reason we put these three together is because these communicate one very, very important idea when it comes to parenting right here. And that's this, that love always allows other people to shine. Love always, you know, allows there to be celebration when things should be celebrated. And love isn't threatened by other people's success. Now, families, here's where this breaks down. Here's where this breaks down in the family structure. It starts with the parents. Parents, if we don't feel good about ourselves, if you don't feel good about yourselves, it's hard to let others feel good about themselves. And if as parents you don't feel good about yourself, it's very difficult to let someone else shine. It's very difficult to celebrate others. And what you begin to discover is it's difficult to let your children feel good about themselves when you don't feel good about yourselves. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, Kurt, that is not the way. It is. I mean, I always want my kids to feel good about themselves. Well, I just want you to think about this for a moment. I mean, if every time they succeed, just think back. Do you ever go into coaching mode where you're like, oh, man, that was awesome, but here's what you could have done and here's what else you should have done? Or are you able to just step back and celebrate the success? I was on a Zoom call with one of my friends this week who's 71 years old, and he was telling me about a moment when he was 15 playing varsity football and how he had this amazing interception, ran it back for a touchdown. His dad was at the game, and he was so excited to see his dad when the game was over, and his dad came up to him, and he said, son, why'd you fall to your knees when you did the end around? And he said, oh my gosh. He's like, but what about my interception, my touchdown? I was like, yeah. But why didn't you do better at this? And see, those words weigh 500 pounds. And so as you think about this, I mean, if you have a hard time celebrating the successes because you like to fill in the gaps with, but you could have done this and you should have done that. Man, this is a good moment to look in the mirror because perhaps there's some growth right here. Because love allows other people to shine. It celebrates the successes. Moving on, Paul goes on to this next statement. And I love this next statement. This next statement that he makes is kind of the centerpiece of Team Walters in our home. And I think you're going to find at the center of his next statement here is where we find mutually satisfying relationships. And this could be within a family, it could be within a marriage, it could be within, you know, friendships. It, you know, really, this is so encompassing that it really reduces the need for countless other rules. And so Paul, he kind of states it in the negative right here. Here's what he writes. He says, love does not dishonor others. Love does not dishonor others. Over the years, as Julie and I have observed families that we are impressed with, and families that we say, man, I want to emulate that. We want to emulate this family. Typically, at the center of that family unit is honoring of one another. I mean, and we look at that, we go, man, that's what we want to create. There's been a culture created of mutual respect. Now, you might say, what does that mean? What does it look like to honor? Well, a better word for that might be this idea of that they deferred to each other, all right? That there was no tolerance for disrespect. I mean, do they have honest, intense communication at times? Absolutely. But there was no room for dishonoring, no room for disrespect. And so as you can probably imagine, this starts again with the parents. And so if I honor Julie and Julie honors me, then we begin to set a tone and a culture for our entire family. Now, here's a small but important delineation right here. Honor is superior to obedience. Right, we've talked a little bit about obedience. When your children are young, it's important that you teach them to obey. It's important that they understand there's an authority and they have to obey. But as we mature, as we grow up, we've got to move that from just obedience to more of a sense of honoring, because honor is superior to obedience. And so if the goal of our parenting through the entire parenting process is just obedience, I'm going to tell you something, you're going to sell it short. And you're going to kind of be like shooting for the lowest common denominator. It's a starting place. It's not the ending place. And think about this. When you have an environment of honor, you don't need a long list of rules. But where there's not a culture of honor, I mean, you've got to cover every eventuality that might come your way. In fact, there's a great scene, great, beautiful, painful a bit at the same time, from the movie Instant Family that I want to show you. And this movie is based on a true story. It's about a married couple, Pete and Ellie Wagner, and how they foster three children, bring them into their home, and they want to help them begin to develop a culture of honor and respect in their home, and it doesn't go very well. So take a look at this.
Speak of the devil.
What are they doing here?
You never said I couldn't have any people over.
Everybody knows you can't have people over when you're grounded. And you know that too, because they obviously came in through the window. This place is disgusting, by the way.
God, what a Nazi.
What did you call me?
I don't know, you just seem like a Nazi.
Get out. Now.
Out. Both of you, out. Go, now.
No, out. You get out of my room.
No, no, I'm staying in your black room. These guys are leaving. No, out the window, no. Out, out.
What is going on in there?
Lizzie, please, I said you're grounded. Where are you going?
I'm calling my caseworker.
Oh, that's a good idea, huh? Get CPS to come make your little brother and sister pack up their court bears and trash bags in the middle of the night, moving back to the Muskies. That'll be really good for them.
Better than you.
No, not better than me. I can't with you. Can you please deal with her, Pete?
Yeah, hey, Lizzie. You're gonna
Look,
have to start.
We're really good people. We just want to make a nice home for you. Is that so wrong?
You're just another white lady who wants to adopt little charity orphans to make you feel good about yourself.
Okay, you know, Pete, you tell her what my nationality is. Tell her.
Well, actually, by blood, she is
one-eighth Comanche, okay? So I'm not that white. And do I look like I feel good about myself right now?
Okay, then tell me. Please tell me. Why did you suddenly feel the urge to get foster kids?
Because it came up.
Well, exactly.
No, I.
Hey, you're not going anywhere. Stop right there. I mean it. Don't open that door. Hey, do not get in that car. You hear me? Don't shut that door. I mean it.
I mean, some of us know that maybe a bit too well. And we know that if we don't have a culture of honor in our home, it is exhausting. I mean, it's almost like a catch you if you can game, right? Catch me if you can. I mean, you said be home by 9. You didn't say 9 p.m. I mean, I'm home at 10:30. I'm before 9 in the morning. Right? I mean, you got to have a rule for every eventuality that comes your way. And here's the other thing. Honor demonstrates something that I think we all want, a satisfying relationship. In fact, here's another way to think about it. Honor is always at the center of every satisfying relationship. few years ago, we had a little guy that moved into our neighborhood, and anybody ever remember the show Dennis the Menace? I mean, like the really old one, Jay North, and then yeah, there was like, yeah, a few of you love that. So he reminded me of Dennis the Menace. I mean, and I loved him. His name was Josh. I don't know that all the neighbors in our neighborhood were as affectionate toward him as I was. I mean, I don't think they liked his questions, and he was always curious and into everything, but I love these things. In fact, he would always like go into our garage and just like look around, and he'd be like, hey, mister, can you give me those squirt guns that are up on the shelf down so we can play? I'm like, Josh, we don't have squirt guns. And then he'd show me where they are. He'd find things in my garage. I didn't even know they were there. And so when Josh first moved into the neighborhood, he met our daughter, and he wanted to come down and play one day. And so when I went out to kind of meet him and see what they were up to, he looked at me and he said, hey, mister, I got a question for you. And I knew I liked this kid. I mean, I didn't know him very well, but I just liked his spirit. And he said, hey, what are the rules down this way? Now, I didn't know Josh at that point, but I know kids like Josh, right? I mean, I've been around the block with kids a time or two. I knew that he wasn't asking what the rules were so he could keep them, right? He was wanting to know what the rules were so he could find the loopholes in them. Because you can't, like, work around the rules if you don't know them. And so I just kind of got down on his level, and I said, hey, look, Josh, listen, we don't work that way. In fact, down here, we kind of operate this way. We try to treat other people the way that we want to be treated. And I'm just going to ask you to do that. And with your words, just say things to other people that you would want said to you. And he just goes, hmm. And he goes off and plays. Because there were no loopholes, right? There was no workaround to that. Now, here's why this is so important. Here's why I'm spending so much time on this one. See, learning how to honor within the family context is not intuitive. It doesn't come natural because it strikes at the core of one of our biggest outages that we have as human beings is our selfishness. We want it our way. We talked about this last week. We're going to look at this more next weekend. We want things our way. And love demands that we put others first. And so the Apostle Paul, in another one of his letters to the Romans in this case, he actually kind of just says this point blank. He comes right out and says it. He says, be devoted to one another in love. Honor one another, and then here's the rub right here. Here's the tension. Honor one another above yourself. In other words, put others first. Not because they deserve necessarily to be first, but because in doing so, we're celebrating what God did for us. I mean, this is what Jesus did for you and for me, right? God allowed his son Jesus to come up and underneath you and I, under our sin, and lift us up and elevate us. So we have to model this. We have to teach this. We have to expect it. And we have to look for opportunities to build these kinds of rhythms, this kind of culture of honor into our families. Let me give you a picture of one of the ways this happened in our family over the last year during the pandemic. And it kind of happened very subtly. I do a majority of the cooking in our home, not because my wife can't cook, but when we were first married, I lived 3 minutes, or my office was 3 minutes from our home, and where she worked was 35 minutes from our home. And so for like the first 3 months of marriage, I'd just be sitting at home every evening, and she wouldn't get home till like 6:30 or 7. I'd be thinking, oh my gosh, I wish she'd get home earlier because I'm sitting around waiting for her to come home and cook dinner, right? I'm like, it'd be awful nice if she'd come home and we could eat dinner. Then it hit me one day. I'm like, I like to cook. Cooking's creative for me. It's a challenge. And so I'm like, I'm just going to take that on. And I wasn't raised in a home that worked that way, and Julie wasn't either. So it was like a new idea. And so I began just cooking for Julie as a way to honor her. And then I've continued it through, you know, the last 25 years of marriage and for our family to this day. And so during the pandemic, kind of subtly one night, Julie began to have the kids take on the cleaning up part after dinner every evening. And you know, partly because she knows I kind of like everything cleaned and all the pans cleaned and put away. And pre-pandemic, we didn't have a chance to do that all the time because we're always rushing from one thing to the next. But during the pandemic, we're kind of just enjoying time. And she didn't, here's what she didn't say to the kids. She didn't say, hey, kids, I need you to clean up after dinner because your dad doesn't like it when it's not cleaned up. We don't want him to be in a bad mood. She didn't say that. What she said and what she taught them and first modeled for them was, hey, let's show your dad some gratitude. Let's show some honor. He serves us every single night. How about we mutually serve him? And she began this trend. And the interesting thing is, it began to make a change in even some of the culture around our table and in our home. And my kids, not only did they begin to pick this up and do this as a way of showing honor, But they began to take on like a posture of gratitude. She called it acts of gratitude. And now nearly every meal that I prepare for them, they thank me specifically. Dad, thank you for making X, Y, and Z. Thank you for this. And it was just, that was like an unexpected outcome, but it started because of a rhythm and a culture of honor. And she modeled it and she taught it and she expected it. So we have to look for ways to build this into the culture of our home. And mom and dad, it begins with you. It begins with the way you treat one another. Because Paul's words, they're so instructive. He says, be devoted to one another in love. And you say, okay, Paul, what does that look like? He's like, it's very, very simple. I want you to honor one another above yourselves. See, healthy marriages, they're characterized by mutual submission. Right? It's by putting the other person first. In fact, a healthy marriage, think of it this way. It is a submissive competition. I mean, it's like a race to the back of the line. I mean, that's what every healthy marriage is. And think about this. You intuitively know this, but any other race, there's a winner and a loser, right? And think about this. If your spouse loses, then I don't think anyone wins. And so we create these mutually honoring cultures. Now, next weekend, we're going to finish looking at some of Paul's handles that he gives us in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. So I hope you're going to plan to be back next weekend as we kind of wrap this up. Before I wrap up today, I want to get really practical for a few minutes. Because, you know, if you choose to say, okay, I'm going to implement this law of Christ, how do we treat others the way Jesus treated us in our home, and you begin to implement some of these handles of kindness and honor and make them centerpieces, and I hope you do. I mean, I just think this is what our world needs right now, but it's certainly what our families need, and it grows empathy and compassion, and it raises kids that are ready for life. And we say it all the time around here. I mean, you hear us say, you know, if you'll just follow Jesus, and you know, you may not even be a believer, and that's okay. Like, if you're just checking out faith, if you just do and put into practice some of the things that Jesus says, I guarantee you, you will find that you are better at life. You're going to be better in your marriage. You're going to be better in your parenting, and you're going to find that life is so much better. It's just amazing how this works. So if you choose kindness and honor as kind of centerpieces in your home, when those things get dishonored, all right, then it requires a response, all right? It requires discipline. Any behavior that is disrespectful or dishonoring or dishonest, you can't ignore it, all right? Because ignoring it is kind of like rewarding it. And what we know is when something's ignored, it gets rewarded. And when something's rewarded, it gets repeated. And so if you want dishonest and dishonoring kids, then just ignore it because that's what's going to happen. But here's the thing. For discipline to be effective and for us to be able to side with our kids as we discipline, then we have to look for opportunities to address the dishonoring and recognize that there's a relationship that's been damaged. We must directly address the fact that a relationship's been damaged. And so there has to be a correlation, a connection between the behavior and the damage in the relationship. In fact, let me put it in a question to you because this might help us think about this a little better. If dishonoring behavior breaks or undermines a relationship, what should the goal of your discipline be? So take lying, for instance. You say, okay, I don't want you to lie. I don't want you to be disrespectful. Why do I not want you to lie? Well, because it breaks a relationship. It's dishonoring. It causes there to be a lack of trust. And so what should the goal of the discipline be if there's a behavior that creates a lack of trust? I want you to think about this because the real issue is a break in trust, right? It's a break in the relationship. And so if that's the case, when we discipline our kids, what is the goal? What are we trying to accomplish? Now understand, I've been doing this a long time. I used to be in student ministry. I worked in student ministry for 12 years with middle school and high school parents and families. I've been doing my current role for 15 years. And so, I mean, for almost 27 years, I've been working with students, families, and helping this concept be understood. All right, and I've observed this in so many families, and I get it. I understand how it's easy to land here, but here's what I've observed. For so many parents, there's really no goal when it comes to discipline. Meaning, if you don't have a goal in your discipline, then it's really just punishment. It's not discipline. Because discipline, see, should make us better. That's why we all want more discipline in our lives, right? Because it makes us better. But if we're just punishing and there's no discipline, then punishment just makes people more careful, right? It just makes you more careful to not get caught the next time. So I want you to think about this. If dishonoring behavior breaks or undermines the relationship, What should the goal of your discipline be? And so here's the answer right here. It should be restoration of the relationship. Because see, if disobedience or if dishonesty or if dishonoring damages the relationship, then the discipline in some way, shape, or form needs to be about helping restore the relationship. So here's the application. Here's the walkout. I want you to, if you don't get anything else this weekend, I want you to think about this. This requires us to discipline our children in the direction of relationship restoration. Relationship restoration. And the sooner you begin, let me tell you, the sooner you begin, the better off you're going to be. Because this has to be taught, right? It's not intuitive. And here's the thing. There's many adults that still haven't figured this out. In fact, perhaps you might have not even figured this out. For instance, if you've ever said something like, I just don't understand why you're still upset. I mean, I said I'm sorry. I mean, if you've ever said that or something like that, then you've probably not learned the art of relationship restoration. And one of the things I've discovered is that so many parents don't understand this, and this is why discipline is not effective. Because they punish, they create a standalone event, they ground or do something that penalizes, but there's no goal, there's no lasting outcome. Nobody gets better as a result of the process. Johnny mouthed off at me, so he took his Xbox away for a month, all right? All right, so let's think about this for a moment. He mouthed off to you, he was disrespectful to you, but you took away a device. So how is the relationship going? Oh, he hates me. Okay, so is anybody learning anything here other than being penalized? Now, if you're tracking along with me, you might be going, okay, Kurt, so how does this work? I'm going to give you a story here in just a moment, but there's a couple things I want to connect dots on. First of all, you're smart enough to know this, but I want to just kind of state it and put it out there. This requires recognizing one really, really important thing, and this applies to marriages. This applies to raising our kids. Our kids need to understand this. This really applies to all relationships, and that's this. At the heart of every transgression is a damaged relationship. And I know that word transgression is a big word, right? That's kind of a churchy word, kind of a religious word. But think about this. At the heart of every transgression, something didn't just happen, but something has been damaged. And so consequently, our discipline has to work to restore the relationship. Otherwise, it's not discipline. It's just behavior modification. So the question I want to kind of leave you with, and I want us to begin asking, is how do I discipline toward restoration? What does that look like? And I want to give you a story of one of the ways this has worked for us, and this is probably one of my finest parenting moments right here, all right? And listen, I'm going to tell you my finest. I have tons and tons of terrible ones, but this is one that I think I've learned from and I think we can learn from. So a few years ago, our youngest, she was at preschool, and she said something to some of the leaders at the preschool and did something that was very hurtful. And it hurt the leaders and the teachers in her preschool, and ultimately the director, who was a friend of ours. And so when we, you know, found out what had happened, not only, you know, did we have to address this with her, but this involved all of our kids, because see, the behavior that happened was something that all of our children had been modeling for her. And we said, listen, you're setting a bad example for your sister, and if she exhibits this, you're all going to have to own this. And so that's exactly what happened. So when we found out what had happened, we brought them all into, you know, our bedroom, and we said, here's what happened, and we need you to own this. And so the way we're going to help you connect the dots that you have hurt someone and you have broken a relationship is that we want you to go to your rooms, and we want you to take out a piece of paper, and you're going to write an I'm sorry note to the director of the preschool. And they looked at us and couldn't believe we were making them do this. And so they went away and began to write. And when they came back, not only did we take the notes to them, but they got to deliver the notes to the preschool. Why? Because they needed to see and own that because of their behavior, there was a relationship that had been hurt and had been damaged, that had been fractured. Because see, here's what kids need to understand. When they've been dishonest, when they've been disrespectful, they have taken something from someone. And consequently, they owe something. All right, this is why we say oftentimes you owe them an apology. I'm going to explain a little more on that in a second. This is why we say I owe you an apology. And I don't know if your home's this way, but my home, my kids will go, all right, sorry, sorry. And we've gone through this 100 times, 1,000 times. I'm like, all right, sorry, doesn't cut it. All right, there's got to be a pronoun in there. Okay, sorry. No, that's still not a pronoun. I need an I'm in front of that. I'm sorry. I needed there to be some ownership on this. I need you to just say, okay, I did something. I'm sorry. In fact, I'm going to give you kind of my version of this, and you can come up with your own version of this if you want to, but we've even moved it a step further of saying, we need you to say, I'm sorry, I, and then tell why you're sorry. I demolished your sandcastle. I'm sorry that I lied and broke trust with you. I'm sorry that I ate all the food and didn't leave any for you because I didn't was think you had eaten yet and I was just thinking of myself. Whatever it is. All right, I'm sorry, I. And then recently, this is an interesting one. I just picked this up recently and I've been adding this to some of our conversations. After we say, I'm sorry, I, then the next step is there anything I can do to make it up to you? I'm going to warn you, they hate this. They hate this. But see, this is how we help them understand. This is why we say, you owe them an apology. Why? Because you've taken something from you. You've violated. You've reduced the relationship. You've broken something. And so this week, I want you to think through this question. How do I discipline towards restoration, not just punishment? And moms and dads, you know this, but I'm going to tell you anyway. This begins with you, and it begins with me. Last weekend, I walked out of services, and Mark was teaching last weekend. Wasn't last weekend amazing? Oh, my word. It was just amazing. Let's just thank Mark for an amazing message last weekend. Love is patient. Love is not pushy. Who is feeling rushed by you? Man, I tell you what, I walked out, and I was convicted. Because see, the day before, I'd had an encounter, a conversation with one of my daughters where she wasn't doing what I wanted in the time that I wanted, and I was pushy. I was pushy. And I could see it. I could see her spirit deflate. I could see it in her demeanor. But I'm like, I'm not getting what I want, and so I was pushing her. And so when I walked out last week, I thought, you know, I need to have a conversation right here. So the next morning, we were hanging out, and I said, you know, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I was pushy with you yesterday. I'm sorry that I was pushy and that I wasn't responsive. You even tried to tell me. She even said to me, Dad, why can't you just be patient with me? And I didn't listen. I just kept pushing. I said, you know, I'm sorry. Will you forgive me? She said, yes. And I said, is there anything I can do to make it up to you? She looked at me. Because all of a sudden, I think she realized the bar just got raised, right? I was trying to model for her what I want her to do. She looked at me, she said, no, just you saying I'm sorry is enough, and if you could just be a little more patient, that would be great. See, it starts with you, and it starts with me. And listen, I believe you can do this. You can do this. And where did I get all this, by the way? Any idea? This is like from the centerpiece of our faith. For all have sinned, all have broke the relationship with God. And what did God do for us? Did he punish us? No. What did he do? He didn't have to punish us. Someday, if you haven't discovered this already, you're going to discover this, that all sin has a built-in wage. All sin comes prepackaged with its own consequence. Sometimes it's right away, sometimes it's later. I mean, we don't necessarily need to be reminded of our sins because we experience, you know, the consequences. And so what did God do for you? He made the first move. He sided with us to restore us. And then once he restored us, he sent us back out in the broken world to go and do the same thing in our broken relationships. The relationships you broke, the relationships I broke because of my impatience, because of our, you know, dishonesty, our unkind words, our dishonoring responses and behaviors. And he's given us the tools to give our kids the ability to do the same. So, loan them your strength this week. Honor one another above yourselves. And discipline toward relationship restoration. This is good parenting, and this is what God did for us. This is where we'll pick up next weekend. Let's go ahead and stand. I want to pray for us. Heavenly Father, man, it's just amazing how patient you have been with us, how kind you are to us. And Father, as we think about those that we're leading, the young lives that we may have influence over, God, there's probably 100 different moments that came to mind in these last few minutes of the places where we fail, the places where we maybe, you know, drop the ball, and we wish we would have done better. And God, I just pray that you help us know what to do with what we've heard. It's never too late to start. It's never too late to begin to make a turn. It's never too late to begin to create honor, a culture of honor. So I just pray that you help us to know what to do, what handles to grab onto. Give us the strength and the power to do it. And God, if there's any of us in here today that just need that kind of touch from you as our Heavenly Father, to be reminded of how patient you've been with us, but you came up underneath our sin and lifted us up and elevated us. You didn't remind us, but you lent us your strength. God, I just pray that would happen in these moments for us right now. I just pray that you would begin to restore, even in these very moments. And we pray these things according to your character, Jesus.